Well, hello again, as if the afternoon stroll wasn't enough for you today. My name's David Jay, and welcome to the second show this year in our series On the Front Foot. This is the Cricket Chat Show. Tim Bowling's with me, and we'll be saying hello to Tim in a moment, and we've got three guests in turn tonight. Firstly, and we'll shortly meet Matt Norman from Outwood Cricket Club. Second up, Trevor Stevens, the evergreen Trevor Stevens from Hawley. And finally, up till 9 o'clock, Jim Grant, wandering cricketer and schoolmaster at Sevenoaks, and he's a member of the Min CC. We've got our local cricket roundup in a couple of parts, and we've also got lots of cricket chat from and about the wider world. So here on Susie 103.4, real local radio for Redhill, Reigate, Hawley and Crawley, it's all things cricket for the next couple of hours. Now, we don't have a telephonist to hand, so if you do want to be in touch in the next couple of hours, you can text us on 07480 025 010. You can give us a call on... you could actually give us a call. Why not? 01737 271034. Or you can email us. That's studio@susieradio.com. And we'll be keeping an eye on our Twitter feed. You can tweet us at Susie Radio. Let's just say hello to Tim Bowling.
Hello, David. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And Matt Norman's with us now. Matt is our Saturday vice-captain and Sunday captain at Outwood Cricket Club. Matt, good evening and welcome to Susie 103.4.
Good evening. Happy to be here.
It's absolutely lovely to have you. But before I speak to you two fine gentlemen, I think we ought to do the first lot of results. Outwood first 11 were set 259 to win away at Cuddam Wise, with skipper Phil Alexander taking 3 for 44. In reply, OCC were all out for 123, Will Blees top scoring on 33. The second 11 played the reverse fixture at home and fielded 4 under 14s against the table toppers. Set 218 to win, Outwood fell short by just 21 runs and Rude 2 run outs. One Paul Jackson on 67 and skipper John Hall also made 67. On Sunday, the Miller men struggled away at Pets Wood, who made 184. Four before a sporting declaration before the scheduled tee. In response, the Millers were 114 all out, with Dave Nelson 31 and Greg Thompson 29. East Grinstead Ones got back to winning ways in the Sussex Premiership, rolling league leaders Cookfield to register a 6 wickets win. Lewis Hatchett, 4 for 32, made the breakthrough, and with Ian Sturmer, 4 for 18, reduced Cookfield to 20 for 4, 27 for 7 and 42 for 8. Brad Hatchett mopped up with 2 for 8 as Cookfield subsided for 59. East Grinstead in turn found themselves 16 for 3 and 35 for 4, but got over the line without further loss. Ian Sturmer picked up the Dunnings Hill Man of the Match award for his destructive opening spell, and in a pairs game, East Grinstead under 10s lost with the last ball of the match to Lindfield. At Merstham, Noman Javed, with 119 not out, including 6 sixes, made his second successive 100 for the firsts, and Laurie Nicholson joined him in the run fest with an undefeated 108 as the Magics piled up 258 for 2 declared at Battersea in Surrey Championship Division 5, but their hosts held out 9 wickets down. The two Centurions made 193 together unbroken, and Razi Khan's 4 for 17 got Merstham close, but a 9th wicket stand of 62 saw Battersea to survive at 202 for 9. 5 points for second bottom Battersea, third bottom Merstham, collecting 12 to close the gap on Merrow and Kempton. Merstham 2s beat St John Grammarians at home, bowling out their visitors for 93. Safian Aslam 3 for 28 and Imran Aslam 4 for 20. Manish Patel's 34 not out was the highest score in an 8-wicket victory. The third 11 couldn't quite see off Woodmanster. Mohsin Ali making a 71 ball, 97 not out. Patrick DeMello not out 54, as Merstham declared on 263 for 4, but in spite of Omar Shuja's 4 for 51, and Asim Ashraf's 3 for 45, the hosts held on at 224 for 9. The fourth team beat unbeaten leaders Sutton. Skipper Gopa Nair and Ben Snelling got them to 212 for 8, and Sutton declined to 103 for 6, whereupon the final four batsmen were each dismissed without scoring. OK, Okay, it's time to talk, sir. And Sir Matt, welcome along. Let me say that again. And you've been at the Oval today, I believe.
Yes, I have. Watching Surrey do very poorly.
Really? Did somebody pile up the runs against them?
Yes, George Bailey got 150.
Is that right?
Yeah. Big scores today in the county championship, wasn't
it? Yeah, all over the place.
Yep.
Okay, Matt, well, it's Outwood we're really here to talk about, and in spite of coming second last weekend, tell us about the progress that you're making at Outwood and how things are on and off the field at the club.
Well, they're going really well at the moment, actually. League cricket is a bit... Our first team has been a bit dodgy this year. We've got all our uni players back at the moment, though, so we've started to accumulate a couple of wins. We've introduced a few new things this year, including a T20 tournament on Wednesdays that's really helped... grow the club and integrate the youth system to our first and second teams, and has really brought through a couple of good under-14s and 15s through to our teams, which leaves us in good stead for the future.
Tell us a little bit about the competition, who's involved and how it's developing as a competition.
Well, it's friendly at the moment, two against Smallfield and two against Hawley. We've also organised a couple for later in the summer against South Nutfield. Strong teams, competitive games, and it's been really good so far.
Do you think that helps bring the youngster through? Is that a good method for you to bring youngsters through to the higher teams?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've been doing it on Wednesday nights, which is the same nights that the under-14s and 13s train, so they get to watch firsthand and all their parents and everything like that. And a couple of them have joined us in the games and done really well.
Good. Now, it's a good. I think a lot of these clubs are doing these T20 matches during the week now. I play for Leatherhead. They do a similar. They have a small league which they do during the week, which is a great way of getting new players into the club, getting youngsters through. So it's good that it's successful and you're bringing the players through. How many teams do you operate on a Saturday?
Just two.
Just two. And which league are you in?
We're in the Kent County Village League.
Okay, how's that going? Where are you currently there?
We're in the Division 2 of the Kent County Village League, and our 2s are in Division 6, I think.
Okay, all right. And are you top, middle or bottom?
We're in the middle at the moment.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about the advantages and disadvantage of Outwood at home being picturesque but small, and a few of the characters who still lurk about down there.
Well, there are certainly quite a few characters. The small ground, it's definitely picturesque, as you say, and the pavilion is lovely. We have great facilities there. We have two amazing nets, and one we can bring onto the field, and we've got great groundsmen who have given us great pitches over the last couple of years. So it does make it slightly high scoring every week, but makes for great games and great cricket.
And tell me how the umpire situation is in your particular division of your league.
Well, most teams bring their own umpire. We have a few that we have over the year, including my dad, who umpires, and Nick Penston, who are both excellent. And then, yeah, basically everyone brings their own umpire. So there are also a few board umpires from the KCVL, but we don't see them very often.
And speaking about Outwood and umpires, how's my long-standing friend Geoffrey Last?
Geoffrey's doing very well. The president is still going strong, comes down every Saturday and Sunday and has a good time. Definitely a big supporter of the club and a great reason why we're doing so well.
I came down to Outwood, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, I think it might have been last summer, first time I've been to the grounds. As you say, it's a lovely ground. I think you were playing a ladies game.
Oh, yeah.
You seem to have quite a strong women's section in the club, is that right?
Yeah, we do. We have it's new in the last couple of years. They're doing really well at the moment. They're doing very well in their league. Winning games and playing,
That's a combination of senior and junior ladies, I assume.
It's just one big ladies team.
Yeah. And how was that originally sort of put together? Was there somebody particularly in the club who wanted to sort of start a ladies section?
Yeah, well, there were a few masterminds. Obviously, the board did an excellent job bringing it in. There are lots of ladies from the village who started it, so wives and general people from the village, and it was orchestrated by them, and they all banded together, and it's been a great success.
Do you find that the links to the village help with the club? Some clubs cut themselves off from villages a little bit, others sort of get involved. Are you sort of getting involved with the village, and is that how you bring some players in?
We're very much a village orientated. We have a sides on Sunday where most of the players who are involved in the two sides on Sundays are villagers. And we also extend from the village into local schools, into Reigate, into Hawley and places like that, where obviously the kids who are living in Outwood go to school, and we've been able to expand through them.
And you've got, according to the report that I've just read out, you've got a number of under-14s playing fairly regular senior cricket. Is that a good thing?
Yeah, that's a great thing. Especially our twos this year have really benefited from having young, fit, exciting cricketers in the team. And they've contributed as well.
And how do you feel about being a relatively tender age still, but skippering on Sundays and vice-captain of your Saturday firsts?
Yeah, it's been a challenge. Sundays, it's been another step towards bringing the youth through on Sundays. Myself, only being 21, I still can got a relationship with the young guys, and it's been great bringing them through. Saturdays has been a challenge, but obviously I have a great captain in Phil Alexander, who's been doing very well this year.
And tell me a little bit about the way in which you've kept one or two of your own school contemporaries at the club.
Yeah, we managed to form a tight group. There are four or five of us all from the same school year, and a couple from different schools. We've all come through together and have formed a really good bond, and we're taking our cricket forward.
A lot of people often comment on the difference between school cricket, where school cricket still exists, where more or less everything is done and laid on for you, and the comparative logistical difficulties of running club cricket at all. Is that something you've found?
Yeah, definitely. Going from a school environment where you had scheduled trainings every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then certain times you had to turn up on the Saturday and you play, and going from that to having Outwood, where you basically, if you don't want to show up for training, you don't have to, and getting everyone together to play on Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, and training as well is a challenge, but it's one I like and enjoy.
What's the you mentioned that you're bringing through a lot of the youngsters. What's the sort of split between what you would consider, say, older players and younger players in the side?
So you mean from older players like me being 21, or
well, I would consider you a younger player, but okay. Yeah. Well, no, maybe yeah. I mean sort of senior players and Colts, for example. The split between those two.
We have quite a big Colts section these days, and we have quite a few senior players. So it's very very much a mixture. We tend to either have one or the other. There aren't many at the moment between 20 and 30 who are playing, but that's what we're looking to change in bringing all these guys through.
And when you select Colts in the senior sides, is it a sort of policy to try and make sure they get fully involved within the game?
Yeah, obviously we want to get them enjoying their cricket and enjoying everything and make sure they're involved.
Yeah, I mean, I think we spoke about this last week, David, or last month, should I say, David, where there is a danger with Colts that you can bring them into higher teams and they can get promoted up a side, go into a higher team, and rather than being involved in terms of getting a decent bowler or bat, all of a sudden they're batting at 11, maybe not getting a bowl, and they could get a bit bored. But you try and involve them and make sure they get a full part of the actual match.
Yeah, well, our second 11 captain, John, who's had quite a few of them play this year, John Hall, he's done a great job of getting them all a game, and especially bringing a bunch of them in at the same time. Letting them enjoy it with their friends has been really helpful.
I do think one of the most important things when you're talking about mixtures like this is that you do have sufficient senior figures and sufficient experience for it to become a learning curve and not just another game of cricket. Matt, you're just in the process of graduating.
Yep.
Let me ask you, I know that Louis Russell Watts is in the similar position at Outwood at the moment. What's the state of student cricket in general, and did you manage to get any student cricket while you were at Reading?
Student cricket, I didn't play much, if I'm honest, at Reading. I played, my housemate was captain of the twos team at Reading, so I played a couple of games for them on and off. But it's very limited. The summer term we have at uni is very short and it's full of exams. So they play games on Wednesdays, so it always clashes and it's quite hard to get a really good team out. But that's at Reading, I'm not sure about.
And did you manage to filter homewards at all while you were still a student on a Saturday and Sunday?
Yes, I managed for a couple of weekends. It's only about an hour on the train, so I managed to get back for a few games.
And Reading's close enough for you to do that. So it's interesting how it's not just school cricket, but a lot of student cricket is really dissolving a little bit.
Yeah, I think it is difficult. I mean, as Matt said, the summer term at university is short and it does clash. I remember when I was at university many, many years ago, and we had two university sides that were playing regularly, and we ended up forming... it's called T20 now, but in those days it was just a 20-over league for players that didn't necessarily want to get to sort of be playing in those types of games. And we played midweek games in the evening, and the team actually became very successful. But that was, you know, to try and circumvent the problems that Matt's highlighted with universities. I guess the other problem for clubs when it comes to university cricket is, as you mentioned earlier, that a lot of clubs don't actually have their full sort of... full amount of players until sort of July time when the students come back. And I know that's a problem for many clubs to try and get those early fixtures filled with players when a lot of their sides are away at university. Is that a problem for Outwood?
Yeah, it's a big problem for us. I mean, at full strength we have 5 or 6 university students in the team at any one time, and yeah, early season can be a struggle to get competitive sides out.
Do you find that there's ever an issue where players will be playing for you as a cult? They'll go away to university and they just don't come back. They disappear. They either go and play for other teams. Do the players generally come back, or have you lost players through that means?
Obviously, we've lost a couple, but most of the time we've all come back. We've all got through the uni experience, still intact as a team. And we're playing well.
I guess one of the crux of trying to get players back, well, part of the crux, I guess, is to have a decent social scene and try and have a good sort of club feeling. I assume the social scene at Outwood is all going well.
Yeah, it's really good at the moment. We've obviously got a really, really nice clubhouse with a fully stocked bar and lots of great facilities, so we can stay there late, and it's really good social atmosphere.
And does the club seek to run specific social events, or is it just the après match, so to speak?
Yeah, there are definitely lots of social events. As mentioned, club night with training and the T20s and stuff like that, and we're having a hog roast in a couple of weeks to get all the teams together, like the ladies, the juniors and the Saturday and Sunday sides all together for a big party, basically.
We need to draw breath now. Fascinating, Matt, to hear about Outwood, and we'll do our best to talk for 10 minutes about a few wider issues. Adil Rashid, gentlemen, any views about whether or not the leg spinner should be in the test team against South Africa, and what about Liam Dawson?
Well, I'm struggling to understand why Rashid was dropped personally. I'm not quite sure why they're trying to pick so many fast bowlers for that particular side. So I thought Rashid had a good summer, to be honest. I thought he's a decent batsman. You know, he's bowled well. It was a strange decision from Root. Whether he's trying to stamp his mark on the side, who knows? I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, there were a couple of strange decisions, I thought. I think Gary Balance being in the team still was a bit of an odd one, considering his nightmare tour of Bangladesh.
But... yeah, you see, I think that's where Tim talks about the new captain stamping his authority on selection. I think that must have something to do with a Yorkshire bond between Balance and Root. Yeah. And I go back, I know I've said this on this show before, but to me, having spent my professional lifetime dealing in body language and reading other people, it just seems to me that you only need to look at Gary Balance, however successful he's been in the county championship again this year, look at his body language once he gets in the test team, and I think I wouldn't have gone that route myself.
It's difficult, isn't it? You mentioned that his scores, he scored 815 runs in 11 championship innings this summer. I think he suffers from the same sort of let's just say sort of attitude when he gets picked for the test team that Alex Hales had, that they seem to play well when they're in their comfort zone, but take them out of the comfort zone and all of a sudden they're struggling. I mean, personally, I've always liked Balance. I think he's a tough batsman. Obviously from Zimbabwe, he's a tough player. However, it was an odd decision. But as you said, I think Joe Root, there is a bond there, and I think that's why he's picked him. He obviously feels as though he deserves a go. He's in good touch, you know, and he wants to put his stamp on it. So.
Let's go back to Surrey then. I mean, the one I feel has been a bit hard done by, and the man in form, is Mark Stoneman, who, you know, he may not be a Surrey native. He may have moved down from Durham to get first team, first division cricket, but I think he's been really unlucky this time around.
Yeah, he's a class batsman playing today. I mean, he got out just before the end of the play today, but he scored so many runs this year, and he's really, really class batsman.
Tell us a bit about your day at the Oval, Matt.
It was a lovely day and lovely weather, lots of batting. It was obviously a very flat pitch. There were lots of overs from Scott Borthwick bowled, the leg spinner, but with not much success, unfortunately. Sorry.
Yeah, it was a big... I mean, Hampshire put on a big total in the end, didn't they, today? 648 for 7 declared at the close. That's a fair... I mean, it was a big scoring day today in the county championship with Kent... I think Kent scored 700-odd runs today as well. So, you know, you saw some big scores at Surrey. But and we were talking earlier on about how many people there. You were saying there was about 500 people or so there?
Yeah, that's what I... Obviously, it's a guess, but, yeah. it was a good, decent crowd for a county championship game.
That's good, yeah. Because, I mean, obviously, with the day-night games coming in into the county game, obviously, they want to try and still maintain the traditional county championship games. There was no sort of feeling from you that the county championship is on its last legs?
No, not really. I think it's essential in order to produce test cricketers. But it obviously doesn't get the fans' attention like T20 or even the One Day Cup does.
How much did you pay for your ticket today?
I got in free, actually.
OK, fair enough.
Now, tell us how that happened, why that was.
My dad has a Surrey membership for the year, so... Right.
So did you go as a family group today, or a group of friends, or on your own?
No, I went with a group of friends.
And a good time had by all?
Yes, definitely.
But you'll need to be getting home in time for supper fairly shortly, Matt. Yeah, OK. Let's stick with Surrey, if we may. What do you both feel about Surrey now? You know, they say once is happenstance and twice is coincidence, but they've now lost three finals on the trot and, you know, not scored enough runs at Lord's last Saturday, and then Alex Hales took it away from them. What do you think about the Royal London Cup and Surrey losing again?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I felt sorry for Surrey. I mean, they came up against a player in Hales who was just absolutely superb. And I think most counties would have struggled on the day to beat any county that's got somebody like Alex Hales on form. It does appear to have become a sort of running theme for Surrey to sort of keep missing out. Their county championship performance this year has been pretty poor, let's be honest. They've played seven matches, they've only won once. They're drawing lots of games, they've drawn five, which I guess doesn't help the morale when they're going into the Royal London One Day Cup. I mean, they got to the final, which is good. Hopefully they'll learn from that, but it's just such a shame that they keep missing out, you know.
Yeah, I think they ran into the form team in One Day Cricket in Notts, unfortunately, and especially Hales, obviously. It felt a lot easier to take this year than it did last year. Where it was a bit of a demolishing. So, I mean, it's getting a bit better.
I think that, you know, you say that Notts are the form team, and having chased down whatever it was, 433.70, I would imagine that they thought 297 was a walk in the park last Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, with Hales going out there, he scored 187 not out. I mean, that's an incredible... The amount of records that actually fell during his innings. I mean, I've got a list here. It said he registered his 150 from just 120 balls. He broke the highest one-day score at Lord's, beating David Boone's 166 for Australia in 89. He beat Jeff Boycott's record for the highest individual score in a Lord's domestic final. That record went back to 1965. And he set a club-best list A individual score, beating Michael Lum's 184 of the previous season. So, I mean, it was just a classy innings. There was just no real way that Surrey were going to be able to win that game once he was in full flow.
Matt, we've got 2 or 3 minutes before Trevor Stevens from Hawley joins us. Anything else specific about Outwood now that you'd like to reflect on before the end of your little slot?
Oh, blimey.
OK, well, in that case, let's go to Lord's again on this coming Thursday. I'm going to be there this Thursday. What are your feelings about prospects for the Test Series against South Africa?
I think it will be an interesting Test Series. Obviously, the two sides aren't quite at their strongest at the moment, with a few injuries going around. But I think as long as England plays their strengths, they should come out easy winners.
That's a bold statement. Easy winners.
Well, South Africa have got some injuries. Their captain's obviously missing.
We talked about South Africa in the last programme, and I think it was Chris Jacobs that tipped them to win the Champions Trophy, if my memory serves me right. And I think we pointed out that they are the perennial chokers, which was what happened. Test cricket is a very different, sort of game. However, they're missing De Villiers, who's taking a break. They're missing their captain, and they're missing Dale Steyn. So I think you're probably right. I think England, if they don't win this series, then there's got to be some serious questions asked. But we'll see. We'll see.
Any idea then, Matt? Any prediction as to the score over four tests?
Oh, 2-0, England.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I'd say 2-0 or 3-0. I can't see South Africa. I really can't see South Africa winning any of those games, especially under the English conditions.
Okie dokes. Matt, who have Outwood got coming up this weekend?
We've got Shoreham at home.
That's Shoreham Kent, presumably.
Yes.
We have this several times over with the Kent Village League. You've got names which aren't the names you expect them to be, if you see what I mean. Lye is one, and Shoreham is another. Tell us very briefly, we've got about 2 minutes, tell us very briefly about some of the grounds that Outwood managed to visit, because at least a village league takes you to some pretty picturesque places.
Yes, it certainly does. Often a bit of a trek across country, but there are some lovely grounds. Played in some lovely places. Specifically, Penshurst Park is a lovely place to play, with a massive manor house in the background. And they do sometimes tend to be a bit dodgy, the pitches, but the grounds are always lovely, and the atmosphere around the clubs is always really nice as well.
I think that's the advantage of playing in a sort of village league, is that you do get to play at some absolutely picturesque grounds, and that, I think that makes a massive difference when you're trying to encourage people to play, when they know they're going to be playing at some lovely grounds. I think it's a big pull.
Yeah, it definitely is.
I mean, Outwood's, your ground's lovely. It's a lovely little ground to play at every week, so you're very fortunate to play there.
Yes, we are. I mean, it is amazing, and the pitches have been really great as well this year. So.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Will you be pretty much at full strength this weekend?
Yes, we will.
And what's the likely outcome of your match against Shoreham?
Well, we'll hope for a win. We're missing our skipper this week, so I'm actually captaining the side. But we've got one of our strongest teams out for a while, so hopefully we'll get the win.
Well, Matt, we wish you every possible success this Sunday and on through the second half of the season. Matt Norman is acting Saturday captain as well as Sunday captain at Outwood this weekend. Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us on the front foot this evening. Hope you've enjoyed it half as much as we have having you.
Yes, it's been brilliant. Thank you, guys.
And thank you very much for coming. Matt, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
It's now my absolute pleasure to say hello and a very good evening to Trevor Stevens from Hawley Cricket Club. Trevor, nice to see you. How are you?
I'm fine, David, thank you. Good to meet you again after so many years.
Well, you've been a little bit of a Suzy Radio listener to the music shows as well, haven't you?
I do. It's tuned in on the car as well, so yeah, enjoy listening.
Well, we're glad to be of service, and you just told me off air you've been playing for Hawley since 1983, and I won't count out how many years that is, but it's a lot.
No, my maths isn't that good either, so I tend to forget it.
So, Trevor, tell us a bit about Hawley, because you've had a few ups and downs as a club the last few years.
We certainly have, David. Yeah, I think in common with a lot of other clubs, it comes and goes. What I'd really like to say is that at the present time it's quite enthusiastic. We've got a good bunch of young lads, they're all very keen, it's nice to see. But as you rightly said, going back a few years, we were on the verge, to be honest. The people were getting too old, still hanging on, but we couldn't find the youngsters. And to be honest, the Colts, we run a very, very effervescent Colts section, but they don't all mature into senior cricketers. They come, they go, they find their own way. So, but this team, we've got quite a few, so it is actually paying dividends at the moment.
Before we talk further about the present and the way that you're on the up again, you're finding your level in the division that you're playing in at the moment, take us back to the 80s when you started playing. Tell us a couple of the names who really stood out for Hawley way back then when I was playing against you on a Sunday.
Well, you probably remember a few of them. Dennis, you remember? He's our honorary scorer, statistician. I think he's club secretary now again. So he's still there doing his wonders in the background. And whatever you say, everyone likes to look at their stats, whether they're good or bad. So Dennis provides those, and the end of season get together when he gives us all the figures. Eagerly awaited. So that's good. Well, Phil Hockey, I'm still playing golf with. You remember him. Prolific left-hander. Chris Allen, who you know probably from various guys, is
he? Well, I do bump into Gubby, as they still call him in Ryegate.
Yeah, we still call him that.
In the watering hole, and I understand he's actually got some official umpire's qualifications last winter.
Well, it was very good, actually. He came along. We didn't realise he'd been doing these exams. Then he came along fully qualified in all his regalia and everything, and then promptly gave a nine ball over or let someone bowl more than their allocation of overs. So we thought the training was well justified. But no, it's great to have him still involved.
And I have to say, with Chris, not just as a schoolboy, but afterwards when he was playing men's cricket, an immense striker of the ball and one of the longest arms I've ever seen.
It was, yeah. I think he won quite a few long throwing competitions. Sadly, his shoulder went and he couldn't do that. But, yeah, he could certainly hit a cricket ball a long way. And, yeah, we won many a game when he scored so quickly. It was great to watch from the sidelines.
What about Messrs. Cotton and Ford and Rogers, who are old muckers of mine?
Well, Ron Ford, as you remember, we celebrated his 80th birthday last week. We had a wonderful do at the club, nice band and everything, and he was looking pretty fettle. Dick was there, yeah. Bernie Wright, you know, still lives near the ground and wanders in occasionally.
Dare I ask how old Bernard is? He must be nearer 90 than 80.
Oh, I don't really recall. All I said was, how's that? And he put his finger up, so that was great for me.
Tapping on, you know, looking back to when Bernard was hosting the East Surrey Sixes, the semi-finals and the final and all of those things. Tell you what, actually, there's a Skittles competition next week, isn't there?
Yeah, I think there is, and I think the cricket section have entered a team, but that's, I think, the Lions, isn't it, run that? And, yeah, that's well attended, and so far I haven't participated for many a year. Maybe I should make an effort.
So let's go back to the current situation, and this is where we can bring Tim in to ask a few questions in a second. But you've had, I think, three on the bounce wins?
Four on the bounce.
And you've been pretty instrumental in most of those.
Well,
tell us about it.
Well, we didn't start the season very well. As you know, we play the 45-over format to start. A few disappointing results with high expectations put us down in the doldrums a bit. But the last four results have been really good. One against the London Gymkhana, who were riding high in the league. We bowled them out for a very low figure. And last weekend, we got a team out. Woodsman serve 145, and we got 145 and knocked them off. They were out for about 110, so it's very pleasing. So this weekend we've got the runaway leaders. So, but we're on a roll. So you never know what may happen. I think we're better positioned than we were a few weeks ago. Anyway, to take them on.
Which league do you play in?
Fuller's.
Right,
Fuller's League, yes.
And you have, and Saturday teams, you play, how many teams do you have on a Saturday?
We have two Saturday teams, so the first and second team, both playing different Fuller's Leagues because of the way it works, because they're all structured. But, second team, unfortunately, last weekend, the game was called off because the other side couldn't get a team, which happens too frequently.
But
I think they're a couple of places higher in their league than ours, so we've got to challenge them.
And we were talking earlier to Matt from Outward, talking about the sort of Colts section. Is there a sort of healthy Colts presence in the senior sides on a Saturday?
Well, there are now, yes. There's some very good Colts coming through, and they're sort of homegrown. Some are more from, shall we say, fathers who've played, as well as those who are pure Colts. But we've got a good cross-section of people that are pretty fundamental to the teams we've got at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned earlier on that, obviously, in years gone by, Hawley went through the sort of downward curve slightly. I mean, I remember playing for a team called Charwood, and the reason that the side folded in the end was because we just couldn't get any Colts through, and there was nobody coming through. The senior players didn't particularly want to carry on being chairman and secretary, etc. And sadly, the club folded. I think when I joined in 87 when I was 16, and I was the youngest player. And when I left, or when the club folded in the early 2000s, I think I was still the youngest player. And the problem was we just couldn't get any youngsters in the side.
Yeah, well, I think we went to the stage where there are too many old players and we didn't actually feed enough youngsters in, and they weren't available of the right standard, unfortunately, because at the end of the day you've got to play to a standard where everyone feels they're in with a chance and so forth. But we were turning up in too many games with, well, not a cat in hell's chance of winning, but we were fulfilling the fixtures, which you have to do. And it's great to see that some of the senior players who are now on the committee and something created the enthusiasm for those people to carry on. And, you know, I'm great. It's, you know, I'm the senior man by a long, long way now. And it's great to see the youngsters, and, you know, they treat me really well. So it's a good combination. We have a good bit of banter.
I was going to say, a bit of gentle sort of leg pulling, is there?
Well, yeah, I don't do a lot of leg pulling. I tend to stand still, and but I create quite a lot of banter, to be fair. And it's nice to see them responding to it.
Well, I think that's very important for all club sides. You have to have that sort of banter going on for people to want to carry on playing. I mean, if people aren't enjoying playing, if it's purely turning up, grinding out results and going home, to be honest, there's not much point playing.
Absolutely not. No, but it's the beauty of a team game. You know, you can get the little nuances. They run through a few weeks and that sort of carries on, and that makes it. You don't get that in single games or anything.
No,
the team ethic is strong, and we enjoy the crowd together.
I think that Katie Field is absolutely assiduous, Trevor, in sending me reports, including all of your Colts results, every week here for transmission over Susie Radio. What's interesting to me, you're talking about age gaps and mixtures. You've got a couple of Renfrews and a couple of Razaks really coming into pretty strong teenage presence in your senior sides.
Absolutely. The two Renfrews are doing really well. Sam is an evergreen or ever-present in the first team this year. I think, you know, I actually heard you coming up. I think you raised the issue there of do you push them too quickly, and I think that's a very difficult balance. And I think you need to challenge them, but not a step too far. And Sam's probably come on better with his bowling than his batting this year. And then we turn to the Razaks. Daniel came into the team for the first time this weekend, did really well. Batted for a long while, held the innings together. Without his long stay at the crease, we'd have never got the runs we did. He didn't run, score quickly, but it was pleasing to see. Dad was there, obviously, watching over his shoulder, guardian eye, but he did really well, and I look forward to them progressing from there.
I suppose one of the difficulties, Trevor, in terms of whether you're taking youngsters a bridge too far, is on-field attitudes by opposition. I mean, you and I go back to days when never a cross word was spoken and it was all incredibly gentlemanly. What's it like in the first and second team that Hawley are playing at the moment?
Well, I do, coming from, shall we say, a while back, find that some of the banter is a little bit inane. And to be honest, when they're young, we've got some youngsters, and the opposition don't realise how young they are, and it's very difficult to actually shut that out, and it's a little bit unfair and intimidating on them, and you can't actually totally protect them from that. The only thing you can actually do is to try and impart on them a little bit of thick skin. Don't bite, Stop back, and then we can have a quiet word afterwards. But no, sometimes it does go a little bit too far.
I think there's a big jump from playing junior cricket to playing in adult cricket, and I think you see, quite right what you said, you see some of the Colts who are playing maybe the first time or the first few times in adult cricket, that they're perhaps sometimes slightly surprised by some of the sledging and, well, let's call it banter, shall we, that goes on. But I think in the long run, I think it does them good to be exposed to that, because they do. It is totally different, and I think that you just don't get that in Colts cricket. And I think for them to be, you're quite right. You have to be slightly careful, but to expose them to that type of adult cricket, I think can stand them in good stead going forward. I know with the playing at Leatherhead, we brought in some of the youngsters, and when they first played, they were very quiet and shy, and it was amazing how quickly that they can start responding. You know, and I've seen adults having a go at kids of sort of 15 and 16, and the kids standing up for themselves, you know.
Well, I agree. I didn't think they're ever shy for a word. The difficulty is it's actually saying the right word, so they don't actually create an issue for themselves. So to reply to the banter, but they've just got to be a little bit careful if it goes too far. But no, I'm with you. Yeah, they're used to the banter at Colts cricket from the word go. There's a lot of chat going on, probably far too much for my liking. But I could actually tell you a little aside for the weekend. The other weekend might interest you. There I was. We had to umpire, unfortunately, because we were one. Chris was away. And the guy at mid-on saw their wicketkeeper take a catch. And he said, God, he said, just like Godfrey Evans, he said. And then he turned to me and said, well, Trevor, it's probably only you and me know who he is. So promptly I sort of said, yes, my dad told me about him. But that's the sort of thing that I like,
good.
that sort of comment.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good witty. That's witty sort of banter, isn't it? And that's the difference, I think. And there's nothing better in cricket when you see something like that and you hear that. Even at the professional level, and you hear the sledging, but then you hear the witty return. I mean, you can buy books about it now and you read about these. It's those witty returns where it's extremely funny. And I think that's the difference between, you don't mind that sort of banter. What you don't like is the sort of personal abuse if you come to the crease and whatever. But an actual bit of sort of joking and, as you've just said,
the clever banter makes everyone's day. And you remember it.
Yep.
And You enjoy that.
Yeah. And everybody smiles then, Trevor.
Of course
they do. It's the out-and-out insults, and I've found, I mean, I've hung the white coat up now, but I've found the way in which fielders will pass comment on a batsman's actual technical performance, and I think that's beyond the pale most of the time. The other problem that I have with this whole area is the way in which you have the empty barrels. So much is just noise for the sake of noise. It's no kind of informed comment.
Yeah, but the perfect answer to that is when someone sort of abuses your batting style or your quality of batting to say, well, I wouldn't be facing the rubbish of your bowling if I was much better than that, would I? But that's the sort of thing you've got to do to push back. But yes, it does become a bit too personal at times, you know. We're all there to enjoy it, and you've got to remember that, and that's the fun of it. And I think deep down most people do, but sometimes they just get a little bit heated because you've got that labelled league.
Yes, yeah, that's a good point, actually. There is a difference between when you play... The standard may not be a lot different, but the fact you can label a game a league game and then play on a Sunday, play exactly the same players...
Absolutely.
..and it's a completely different...
Yeah, it just seems to add that edge that there's a ethic.
Yeah, I guess there's points at stake, which for some reason then people decide that they have to behave in a different way. But, you know, that's...
Yeah.
I suppose that the youngsters and... all of us to a certain degree take lead from the professionals. You can watch the professional game and you can watch that sort of stuff going on at professional level, which is not right, but it happens, and therefore the youngsters see that and copy it in many ways.
Oh, absolutely. We're all followers, aren't we? So if you see it on the box, you're going to get someone do it before long. And
it's almost as though they mimic a lot of the...
They're
actually mimicking exact words that have been spoken in professional games. I had it a couple of years ago where I was playing, and I came in on it. It was a hat-trick ball. I came in to bat. The wicketkeeper started sledging me. They were all fielding close, all sledging me. Oh, you're the last man. It all depends on you. Yeah, I've heard it all before. My response, and the only time I've ever done it, hit the guy for six.
Gentlemen,
shut him up.
Gentlemen, I'm going to have to cut across you there because that's almost the end of our first hour. And if you're listening in and expecting yet another music show on Suzy 103.4, we have to apologise. You're with On the Front Foot. It's our monthly cricket chat show. We've had a long chat with Matt Norman from Outwood, and we're halfway through our time with the evergreen Trevor Stevens from Hawley. We'll be talking a little bit about one of his sons, and then some more generalities about the wider world of cricket after we've done the news, and another set of results. On Suzy 103.4, we've got news next. Suzy Radio. Well, that was a nice brief weather forecast. Nice day in store for tomorrow, and many thanks to Tim for the weather. We'll be returning shortly to Tim and Trevor Stevens from Hawley. In case you're wondering what's going on, welcome to the second and final hour of On the Front Foot, second show of the season. All things cricket, will be widening the discussion out for the next 20 minutes or so. If you would like to get in touch, I'll just reiterate that even though we gave you the phone number at the top of the show, we haven't got a telephonist in the office tonight. So if you'd like to get in touch, best to contact us by text 07480 025 010, email studio@suzyradio.com, and we'll also be keeping an eye on our Twitter account, which you can reach at Suzy Radio, S-U-S-Y Radio, all one word. Hawley firsts made it three wins on the trot, beating Woodmansterne, who'd been in third place going into this match. Matt Reed made 31, and 16-year-old Danny Razak batted 2 hours and 98 balls for his backbone 19. From 113 for 7, Sam Renfrew, skipper Charlie Robbins, Abdul Razak and the evergreen Trevor Stevens got Hawley to a competitive total of 147 for 9. And from 48 for 4 and 87 for 5, Woodmansterne were checked by Jordan Robbins, 4 for 20, and Trevor Stevens with 5 consecutive maidens in his 3 for 18 from 14 overs. Woodmansterne mustered just 112 all out. Hawley are now fifth in Surrey County League Div 2, 1 point off fourth, 6 off third. Next weekend they entertained league leaders Wandgas, who have 9 wins from 9 games. Hawley's second team fixture was conceded by Hazelmere. The under-13s earned a place in the final of the League Cup against Limpsfield Chart. The under-11s beat Salfords and are third in the league table. And the under-14s play their cup final this Thursday.
Reigate Priory Firths lost their second game of the Premiership campaign. Fellow title contenders Normandy winning by 5 wickets, but Priory stayed top. A record 4th wicket partnership between Brad Scriven, 126, and Sam Hall, 81, took the Llamas to 260, but Normandy, courtesy of a lightning start from their openers, completed the victory with 9 balls to go. Second team fared better. Stephen Hurst, 4 for 12, the pick of the bowlers, as they bowled Normandy out for 158, and an unbroken 4th wicket partnership of 116 between the Horton brothers Luke, 78, not out, and Rory, 54, not out, led the Llamas home with more than 13 overs to spare. 66 not out from number 9 Nick Harmer rescued the thirds from a perilous 106 for 7 to 216 for 9 declared against Spencer, who saved the draw on 147 for 7. The fourth team's victory over Wimbledon Village saw the Llamas 153 for 7 before the last 3 wickets put on another 210. Number 8 Manoj Rajarathinam's career best 140 off 64 balls with 17 fours and 9 sixes, and number 10 Nick Gavigan's 85 brought the record 9th wicket partnership of 126, and the last man, Shamana Devaraju's 20, helped the Llamas to 363. Wimbledon Village capitulated for 98. Andrew Hode took 6 for 24 as the 5th team bowled Spencer out for 123, and Paul Fisher's 53 not out guided the Llamas to an 8 wicket win. If you'd like your reports and results on Susie Radio on this show monthly or on a weekday afternoon, email me, david.jay@susieradio.com. Trevor, we were mentioning Reigate Priory there in that second lot of results. Tell us a little bit about some of those close finishes and performances that your younger son Richard's been involved in this season at the Priory.
Well, I don't hear too much because he doesn't blow his own top too often, but I have a sneak look at the results and the fixture cards, and it did seem he had a couple of good matches where he plucked the game or turned the game around with a batting performance, which for him hasn't been the norm of recent years. So I think he's gone up a couple of places in the order to promptly get a low score last weekend.
These things are said to try us, but, you know, when Priory are winning successively by one run and then one wicket twice, this is a really monumental contribution. I mean, I can remember when I was still umpiring school first team cricket and, you know, Richard was hitting it into the road at St John's Leatherhead, which is one heck of a strike on a good wicket. He's a powerful player with bat and ball, your younger boy.
He's fairly hefty. I think Mum fed him pretty well and built him up. So, yeah, he does hit it a long way when he connects, of course, like all of us. But, no, it's good. It's good he's had a little bit of success in past years. I think he's flattered to deceive a little bit. He sort of was a little bit down, but this has brought him up and his enthusiasm levels. And it's good to see. So long may it continue, you know. And it's good to see them doing well, you know. Interesting weekend, so they've got the challenge ahead, but I'm sure they'll come round.
It's good to see things swapping from side to side in the Premiership, year in, year out. It's not always the same side topping the whole thing.
Well, in fact, yeah, it's quite interesting, actually. Some of the sides there, we actually played against quite a few seasons ago, so it's not the familiar names, and so there has been quite a lot of movement.
Tim, do you want to head us off in the direction of a topic from the wider fields of cricket?
Yes, what should we talk about? Well, there's been lots going on. I mean, we were talking last time we were here about the Champions Trophy. And I think we had Nav in from Mersham Cricket Club, who predicted, I think, England would win. Despite the fact he's a Pakistan fan, he predicted England were going to win. Chris Jacobs predicted South Africa, and I think I predicted India. I think you were quite wise in keeping counsel. And as it turned out, Pakistan won fairly convincingly. They thrashed England in the semi-final and then managed to a very convincing win in the final, which for me personally it felt very reminiscent of the way the Pakistan side played in the 92 World Cup, that they started off very poorly, they had a couple of dodgy results, managed to scrape their way through, ended up winning the trophy in the same way they won this year. So it was a very good tournament and a brilliant performance from Pakistan.
Indeed, yeah. I think it just proves the unpredictability when you're only playing a one-match sort of format against each other team. You're all due one bad performance of thing. And I think that's what happened to England, unfortunately. They played so well, and then it just sort of all collapsed against Pakistan. All credit to them, don't take it away. But they were on a a rise as opposed to a plateau.
But there's always that problem for England at 50 over cricket, isn't there? That we always seem to, we're pushed forward, we think we're going to do well, and we never quite get there. I mean, going back years, it was always the same in the 87 World Cup, 92, and we've seen various tournaments since then. And I think I'm sure we were probably favourites for this tournament. I don't think anybody predicted that Pakistan were going to come through. And as usual, then England just fail at the last.
No, but if it had been a league format or something with the two top from a longer league, I'm sure England would have prevailed in that tournament. I think what was disappointing for me was the lack of performance from teams like South Africa and so forth, who really did flatter to deceive, you know, the talent they've got.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that in the last show, and we mentioned the fact that South Africa do tend to have this. Well, even more so than England, they choke a little bit in the moment, and it happened again.
Yeah,
and it keeps happening with South Africa. They never seem. I mean, it becomes a mental block almost. They never seem to be able to get over that sort of final little, just pushing them over the line. And I mean, I would say I feel sorry for them. I do feel sorry for them in that respect, that they just can't seem to get there. They seem to make the same sort of fundamental errors. Just when it counts.
Yeah, they seem to freeze, don't they? I think. But it gets in your mind, doesn't it? And you think, here we go again. And once it starts just to go against you, you go the same old slippery slide.
Pakistan do come up with surprise package bowlers, don't they? There's always somebody off the production line, a bit like the West Indies used to have. I would say, I mean, you make the comparison with 92 and 2017, Tim. I don't think anyone that Pakistan is handing the ball to at the moment could hold a handle to either Waqar or Wazim in their pot.
No way.
No. Well, that side, I mean, when you look at that side back in 92 and you look at the names that were in that team, it makes you wonder how they ever struggled at the early part of that tournament, because there were some absolutely superb players. I mean, that tournament was just a great tournament anyway. It was probably the last hurrah for many of those big names, certainly for England. You had the likes of Botham and Lamb and all those sorts of players, and for lots of these other sides as well, Pakistan included. Imran Khan came back as captain, gave the famous cornered tiger speech to his players, and they performed. And Pakistan do seem to be able to pull it out of the bag when it counts. And you never know with Pakistan which team is going to turn up. If the good team turns up, the chances are you'll get rolled over. If the bad team turns up, you're going to get a big victory. So it was, you know, it was good to see that them big performance in the final, and fantastic for an India-Pakistan final is superb for the millions of fans worldwide that were following that. So it was good.
We were talking in the last show as well, Trevor, about the way in which you have to feel sorry for a fine bunch of cricketers who can't play international cricket in their own backyard, and they have to go to Dubai, and it's a real great big heap of 66 to 1 against for them most of the time.
Yes, it must be difficult. I think, you know, obviously difficult reasons and so forth that they can't play at home. But, you know, politics is integral with the game and other aspects these days, so you can't avoid that. But, no, all credit to them too, as you say, being a nomadic side almost.
Do you think there's still a place for the Champions League in the cricket calendar? Because they're talking about perhaps scrapping it now and sort of trying to make the T20 World Cup slightly bigger. Do you think there is actually a place for it still with the World Cup and the T20 tournament going on?
Personally, I do. I think I think 50-over cricket we can relate to. 20-over cricket, the level is so exceptional. Even when we play locally at 20-over, it's a completely different game to the way we see it on the television. Test cricket still has its place. I would like to see it in the calendar, and I thought the way it was organised this year, it was over a fairly short period, day in, day out, and it was quite compact overall, so that worked well. It sort of, you know, I was glued to the box for many a day.
Well, there were no sort of matches which were going to be sort of foregone conclusions, were there? Unlike the World Cup, where you do have the likes of, well, the smaller countries that can qualify, which can be good, but you get the likes of Bermuda and these smaller countries playing. In the Champions Trophy, you're obviously every single match counts, and that you're playing the proper sides. I mean, when we talked in the last show about the fact that, you know, the West Indies were missing from the actual tournament, which, as we discussed before, was just really sad for cricket that the side like the West Indies couldn't make it into the Champions Trophy.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm sure you remember the great West Indian teams and what they added, you know, to cricket in general. And it's just such a shame when those sort of sides are missing.
Their spectator base in the UK, you know, go to a crowd where you've got lots of West Indians, you always get wonderful banter.
Yeah.
But maybe they can extend it. And the one thing I'd actually like to see, I think Australia suffered because the games that were called off. Mm. I'd like to have a reserve game day for every match, because, to be honest, you know, that just didn't pan out fair.
No, I mean, I think the scheduling was a bit bizarre, and I think the ECB... quite rightly said, well, the scheduling was nothing to do with us. It was down to the overall...
The ICC.
That's it, sorry.
Yes.
I was thinking of the Indian cricket board, but yeah, the ICC had scheduled everything. Likewise, it was the ICC that decided to use a used pitch for other games, which was a slightly odd decision. Having the actual tournament at this time of year and you're playing games in Cardiff and these sort of venues is always going to be a slight worry, but... You know, I think, as you say, there is a place for the trophy. So
we're running out of time. Let me just ask you very quickly: do you think there is room for the Champions Trophy and the World Cup still?
It's a bit of a pinch, I would say. Maybe they have to alternate it or something. But I personally would like to see them both carrying on. But I think other pressures, commercial pressures, will probably come to bear. Mm.
Last thing, Trevor, quick prediction for England-South Africa, 4 test matches?
I'm not going to sit on the fence like you do, David. I'll probably go for a 3-0.
Trevor Stevens, evergreen Trevor Stevens from Hawley Cricket Club. It's been an absolute delight to have you with us here at On the Front Foot, and we hope we'll see you again soon. Best of luck for the weekend.
Thank you.
Jim Grant, good evening, and welcome back to On the Front Foot, as it's called this year.
Yeah, thanks. Good evening.
It's lovely to see you here. Both you and I go back far enough, Jim, to not just remember Henry Blofeld and his pomp, but some of the superstars of years gone by. On
absolutely.
Test match special.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, yeah. Well, I used to be taken down to Bognor Regis on holiday by my parents, and... I used to find these seaside holidays excruciatingly dull, and Test Match Special was my salvation if there was a Test match on. So I suppose the team then, Mosey, Arlott, Chris Remark and Jenkins, Boyle doing the, and Fred Truman doing the expert.
And dear old Brian Johnston, of course.
And Brian Johnston, yeah.
I think it's interesting, Blofeld's interviewed this very morning, in actual fact, in one of the papers. He's announced that he's going to retire, and he's taking the view that it's not the public that has a problem with his accent so much as the BBC. And he added, I think if I came along now, what would people think of me? They might take a view and think this chap's not right at all. Even more pertinently, if Brian Johnston or John Arlott came along now as young men, what would people think? Arlott had a wonderful voice. Would he fit in with Radio 5 Live in 2017?
well, I think he would have... would he have been given the opportunity is the crucial thing. He would have fitted in brilliantly anywhere, because he was a genius with words and a fantastic live commentator. So, you know, the skills would be there. I mean, there are certain voices, aren't there, that from your youth you just associate with, not just with cricket, but with certain sports. So I can't really get my head around the fact that anyone other than Bill McLaren commentates on rugby union now, really. Mm. So I think the atmosphere of Test Match Special has, to a certain extent, been maintained and evolved as the game has gone on. It's still a jolly good listen, isn't it?
Well, I think we talked earlier on, didn't we? We were talking off-air about the fact that Phil Tufnell has come along, who, if someone had said to me a few years ago Phil Tufnell will be on radio and he'd be doing Test Match Special, I would have thought, no, he's not going to be great at doing that. But actually, I think he gets what Test Match Special is about. I think he understands that it's not just a case of reporting what's in front of you. It's a general... It makes the listeners feel as though they're part of a conversation that's going on all day, as though they were sitting in a test ground with friends, listening to their friends talking about what's happening in front of them.
I think so. But it also, I think more than that, reaches out beyond the cricket aficionado. It reaches... Yeah. It's entertaining. If you're driving in the car, and my wife is not a cricket fan, let's be, so we would always have Radio 4 and the Test Match Special on, but she enjoyed listening to it because they were funny and they were entertaining, and it drifted off into interesting, you know, and often at its most entertaining when there was no cricket.
Well, that's it, yeah, when it's raining or there's rain stop play or something. Yeah, that you're exactly right, that's when it is at its most entertaining, because that's when the genius of people like Blofeld comes out and they can actually keep it going and talk about stuff for hours on end, often about nothing more than trivial stuff, but actually you're hooked by it, and you're hooked by what they're going to say next.
And for that, you need broadcasters, and you need people with a life and a set of interests beyond the game. And I think the mistake that a lot of sports broadcasting has made in recent times is to employ exclusively ex-professionals, some of whom are very, very good, but it means that, you know, you've got that... There are limitations, aren't there, to what they're going to have a conversation about?
Really. Absolutely. I think as well that if you go back to the post-war period when television was in its absolute infancy, radio broadcasting was everything, all of what would be thought of as the great commentators of that generation, I suppose with the exception of Dan Maskell, who was a professional tennis player, they were all broadcasters and journalists first and foremost, and scarcely none of them was any sort of a professional sportsman. The summarisers, to a degree, even quite early on. Norman Yardley was mentioned on the Calypso that we just heard. But yes, a different world. I do think that sometimes you can listen now for minutes on end, never mind describing the scene, you can listen for minutes on end to TMS without getting the score sometimes, and I don't think that's as it should be.
No, I'd agree with that. I mean, but the whole idea of the expert pundit, the expert assistant commentator, was that was the ex-professional who had the insights into the game, who could explain what was going on for the layman, and... In a way, the commentators used to be the people who stood between them and the listener, and I think that relationship is awesome. And Sky, for example, they just mix and match and do both, don't they? They have two commentators, but the quality of the relationship is completely different now, isn't it?
I saw Henry Blofeld at Newdigate where a couple of years ago when they were playing Lashings for to try and generate some funds for their new clubhouse there, and he commentated for probably a couple of hours on his own with he knew the Lashings players, but he knew none of the Newdigate players, but he still managed to make that really entertaining. Even at that level, he could talk about stuff that was going on in front of him and make it sound interesting. So the fact that you could sit there listening to this guy commentating, I mean, it helped the fact that you knew it was Henry Blofeld and he had that particular voice. But the guy, I mean, the word is bandied around far too much, but the guy was a genius, and there's no doubt about it in terms of cricket. And it's going to be a massive hole for TMS to fill.
Realistically, I suppose he's quitting while he's winning. I mean, Johnston went on to the bitter end. Arlott sailed off into the sunset and went to Alderney to drink a few extra bottles. But that's really how it was. Jonathan Agnew is very well regarded, I think.
Yes.
He's great, I think. I think he really finally cemented his place in the annals with the whole couldn't get his leg over moment, which was just wonderful. It was absolutely brilliant. But... he's absolutely part of the furniture now, isn't
but
he?
He's almost sort of inherited the Jonners sort of spirit, hasn't he, really? He sort of was brought up commentating. He was brought up on TMS with Brian Johnson. And I think it's clear that he sat there whilst doing his job, listening and learning from Brian Johnson. And when I listen to TMS, I often sort of hear bits of Brian Johnson in Jonathan Agnew. And it's almost like he's sort of carried that spirit on the show, which is what's needed, really, because that's, as we said, that's the essence of the show.
Doing a bit of name dropping and trumpet blowing just for a moment, I think you were there then, Jim. We had a magnificent night at the grammar school when dear old Bill Frindle, who's also no longer with us, managed to invite Brian Johnston free of charge to come and do his one-man show. It's one of the few times I've seen that concert hall packed to the gunnels, and it was a wonderful night. So that was commentating on TMS and so on and so forth. We've just mentioned Newdigate. Jim, how are things with the men?
Oh, the men. We're not having a vintage season. We've struggled a little bit in terms of results. We've had some good close games that we've been on the receiving end of. We played Newdigate quite recently and had a very, very close game and right down to the wire and just lost, just failed to hold on. And it's that new pavilion there is coming on very nicely. I can remember my first games there with the old coronation tea trays that they used to serve the tea on. It's a bit of a shed, wasn't it?
I've always said that I think Newdigate, amongst all the local villages, cricketing ones or otherwise, has got as much sense of village as I can recall. Mm. When we did the Remembrance Day broadcast from the church at Newdigate and the ceremony there, the village history, because John Colcutt, who obviously is a good friend of this show, is not just Mr. Newdigate Cricket, he's Mr. Newdigate local historian as well. And the detail that John was able to furnish for me with that broadcast, and there was just this whole sense of the Six Bells pub over the road being shown round the church in the gloaming and listening to the history and what went on in the First World War and local lads who didn't come back. It was tremendous. And I think that does permeate through to the cricket club.
Absolutely. Yes. And we're off on our tour. I'm off tomorrow to Somerset for our annual tour.
Tell us about that for a minute.
Well, we've been touring to Somerset since probably the late 80s, about 89, I think, might have been the first time we went down there. Since then, we've always played one fixture, has been a constant through that time, and that's a village called, well, an amalgamation of villages called Broadway and Horton, not the posh Broadway from the Cotswolds, a much more humble one. We play our Ashes match against them. And the story of that is that they, a good few years ago, inflicted our heaviest ever defeat on us by a lot of runs. And our captain, our esteemed captain, had been boasting a lot about the luckiness of his pants. And his lucky pants were ceremoniously burned in the pub, a car park, after the game. And they are kept in an urn in the pavilion at... Broadway in Norton.
Wonderful stuff. I remember coming all the way down with my late mother to watch you play at Stourhead. Splendid stuff.
Yes, we'd lost that first time this year. We've lost that fixture finally. It's been hanging on and hanging on. They've been struggling to with league cricket the way it is, and the young lads wanting to play more competitively. They've been struggling to accommodate touring sides now for a little while.
Are you playing increasing amounts of overs cricket even on a Sunday?
It's not too bad in the southeast. You can hang on, but yes, we are playing increasing amounts of overs cricket. And you go down to Somerset, and there's just nothing else available. They don't even to the point where they don't really understand what you mean when we say, "Can we have a timed game?" They don't get it.
It's sad, isn't it, that that's the case?
It is a shame.
Because time cricket, I mean, I sympathise, because often when we're playing cricket with Colts and you try and say this is a time game, the concept to them seems almost alien. But some of the best games I've played in have been, excuse me, time games, where they've, you know, that you've been trying to get a team out, a team's been grinding out a draw, but actually they're what some of the most exciting games. And it's very sad that that part of the game is removed when you're playing limited.
Yes, and it's dead in the water at schools. I mean, I work in, you know, quite a leading independent school, but it's so cricket's still quite a big thing. But the first 11 play predominantly overs games.
Why do you think that is? Is that just because want a result?
Yeah, I think there's two things. I think one is the fact that people and parents especially are increasingly impatient with the length of time cricket takes as a game. So they want shorter games. They want to be able to pick up their children at 6 o'clock, not 8 o'clock. but I think for some time now, and I think this connects to a much wider issue, in a broader issue in cricket, is there's been a lack of faith in that traditional form of the game that you described, and a belief, I think, that children will prefer to get, as we say, a result. But of course, a draw is a result. And it takes a little bit of care to manage a game of cricket well. And unfortunately, I think when, you know, in the days when I was coaching at Reigate with you, David, you knew that if you were up against, say, I think, you know, say Tiffin, for example, you might have a team batting after tea and killing the game off, or not really trying to go for runs, and yeah, there's a spirit of the game in which it needs to be played. So I think, because it's difficult and you need skilled coaches of teams to be able to manage it, I think gradually it just sort of kind of fell.
The other problem, I guess, is that there is still time cricket played in at sort of senior adult level. So the Colts come up through school cricket playing overs cricket, and then all of a sudden they're playing in adult sides where they do have to play time games. A lot of the, I think the Surrey League now is split in half, so you play half timed, half overs, and it is difficult to try and explain to them that this is a time game, this is how you play, and to get their heads round what the right tactics are for those games,
and to get them to realise that, you know, it's a more multi-dimensional game when you have the option of a draw. I mean, it was your old friend Ronald Young's, David, I mean, years ago on Jersey, we were sitting watching a game on College Field, and he just sort of, and it was a tight, edgy finish, and he just leaned over to me and said, well, you know, whenever they take the draw away from cricket, it diminishes the game, and it does, particularly at school, because you're going to have mismatches. So you're going to have games where one side is much, much, much better than the other. They've got a few powerful batsmen, a couple of good bowlers and so on, and I think if you have the possibility of a weaker team holding out for the draw, youngsters get into the game in a way they don't otherwise get into the game, and they can become a hero because they're batted out for five overs at the end, even though, and they will have learnt a lot. The point in the 2020, they probably won't get a bat, or they'll have to slog it, you know, and so they don't get a chance to play an inning sometimes. And the same thing with spin bowlers, you know, when you set a target and you're trying to buy wickets, suddenly your little leg spinner who bowls 2-4 balls and over can be your match winner. Whereas in a limited overs game, he's just going to get taken off, isn't he?
Jim, you mentioned Ronald Youngs, who's 21 years gone. I can barely believe
sad.
It. But like yourself, Jim, and I think you were making the point earlier about radio broadcasters as well, Ronald was a man exactly like you, with many strings to his bow. CLR James, what do they know of cricket who only cricket know? And in terms of what you were saying earlier on about parental time at Sevenoaks and indeed at other places, you will remember, a few years younger than Tim, where we used to work together. Remember Andrew Pearson, who was a fringe cricket, who memorably turned round to me one night after nets and said to me, "Trouble is, sir, life's so short and cricket takes so long." And I've remembered that ever since. Now, Jim, we were talking about your wandering cricket. We were talking about all sorts of bits and pieces. Let's just finish the broadcasting business off. Tim, we've got English cricket back on the BBC when the new deal is struck. It's not for 2 or 3 years.
No, that's right. I think we were talking earlier on about it, that obviously BT are doing the Ashes this winter, but then the BBC have earned the rights. Now, you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong here. Was it the highlight package which the BBC are doing?
I've got it in front of me. Sky and the BBC sharing the content during a 5-year deal from 2020. BBC broadcasting 10 matches in the new T20 competition, including the final, and 2 England T20 internationals. So that's live cricket on terrestrial television. And Sky has live rights to all England's home international cricket, county cricket and women's cricket, having comfortably outbid BT Sport, the new kids on the block. And the BBC will be showing, instead of Channel 5, highlights of all England men's and women's international fixtures, also exclusive digital clips from all formats, and it's retained rights to live audio broadcasts, so TMS is secure.
Well, that's good news, but I mean, from what I read, they're talking about it being worth £1 billion to the ECB for 5 years, which, if you'd said that a few years ago, that they'd be able to generate £1 billion in 5 years, I think most people would have just laughed at you. But that's how, I guess, cricket has evolved. It's going down the same lines as football in terms of the amount of money that's being pumped in. If you look at the support the Indians, the Indian market brings, Pakistan... you know, I guess it's no real surprise, but it's good news that the BBC's going to be getting some of the cricket back, and as you say, great news that TMS is going to be secure.
Well, I always thought, you know, they have there are certain sporting events that are sacrosanct, aren't they, and that are by law, I believe, confined to terrestrial television. I think Wimbledon would be one of them, Grand National. I always thought home England Test cricket should have been part of that package. I mean, it was great that Sky covering the overseas tests and all the one day stuff and everything like that, but I felt, you know, that was something that really should have always been the case. And it's good. I mean, it's better than nothing, isn't it? It's good that it's coming back to a certain extent.
That was always the conundrum, wasn't it? That you would weigh up whether, do you want the money or do you want the terrestrial coverage? And I think they obviously plump for the money. As a result, the coverage has died off, and perhaps there aren't as many people into cricket as they were before, which is why there was the need for T20 to come around, because they were losing that sort of support.
Well, it's a strange irony, isn't it, that you're getting all this money and talking about wanting to build up the game at the grassroots, did you actually take it away from so many of the potential audience who might get it? I mean, that's how a lot of us got. I didn't come from a cricketing family. I had no real experience of the game at all. My dad wasn't a cricketer. I just ended up on a weekday in the school holidays, sitting in front of it. And it would have been really probably 70. It would have been Massey in Lords. It would have been that, I think, that got me going on it. And then this 73 was the West Indies, and that really hooked me. And I started going to the Oval to watch the game live. It was that television contact, first of all, that even just made me think, well, what's this strange game that is actually rather fascinating?
And you're right, that the fact is that people don't necessarily, or in recent times haven't had that perhaps as much as before, that has required T20 to try and bring the kids in. Unfortunately, yes. The gimmicks are needed to try and bring them in. At least if it brings people into the game at a young age, then you know, you've got a generation coming through.
Well, I think that's the theory. But as I say, it's a bit like the conversation we were having earlier about taking away the draw. I think, you know, I will take, next week I'm taking my daughter to Laws for Middlesex, Surrey. It'll be a fun evening. We'll have a beer or two and an ice cream. And you know, it'll be wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. A good evening. Entertainment, no question, but the limitations of that game, if for someone who really loves the game and really gets hooked and fascinated by the game, you know, it's like eating candy floss, isn't it? It's gone. Whereas, you know, test match cricket is like eating a sumptuous five course meal.
So what do you think about the day night test matches and the day night county games which they're bringing in with the pink ball? Do you think that's going to sort of fill that halfway house in between, not necessarily having the candy floss of T20?
I think it potentially could. I'm a sort of purist when it comes to cricket, but I'm not a dinosaur, I don't think. And I'm sure there are a lot of people like me, and I think yes, I think that possibility of playing proper cricket at a time when large numbers of people are free to come and watch it has always been the big bind. It's always been the big problem, hasn't it? When they switched in the county championship years ago to four-day games, they could have then gone Friday to Monday with those games. They could have had the courage of their convictions and said, right, we're going to put the top form of cricket right at the time when people can come and see it and build an audience for it. But they didn't. They stuck them in the middle of the week and kept the one-day stuff at the weekends. And, you know, I think that was a shame. But
can I change tack just slightly, Jim? Do you think there's going to be room, as everybody seems to imagine there will be, for the City franchise T20 and the full county set-up NatWest Blast?
I'm not sure. I don't know about this City T20 thing. In some ways, perhaps it is a good idea to just dislocate it from the whole county thing. But the pessimistic side of me thinks that it won't be. It will probably be within my lifetime that first class cricket, other outside Test matches amongst a few nations, possibly even, might well die a death, and that cricket will become like a circuit of 2020 competitions with cricketers, a bit like professional golfers or racing drivers or something, you know, who carry their bat and their kit around and play as individuals with personality, obviously, to a certain extent, but for different franchises.
Just as a follow-up to that, Jim, we mentioned earlier in the show, and I'd like to ask you, do you think there's scope as well for a full 50-over World Cup and the Champions Trophy, which seems to meet with so much more approval?
The Champions Trophy is a better format in many ways, isn't it? Because it feels contained in a more sensible... I mean, that last World Cup was just a marathon, wasn't it? It was just too unwieldy. So I don't know what they're planning for the next one. I think potentially there could be, but in a way, the more tournaments you have, the more you dilute the special nature of the, you know, and it's a bit like the football game, putting about 48 teams in it now, aren't they? It seems.
Well, it's the same with the Ashes,
crazy,
isn't it? We seem to be having the Ashes every every 18 months or so almost, and it gets to the point where again it dilutes the actual essence of that particular tournament.
That's
the same thing, really.
I think that's right.
Jim, you started out longer ago than either of us care to remember, and I've got 10 years on you, coaching some girls' cricket in teaching appointment.
Yes.
What do you make of this World Cup that's currently in progress?
I haven't seen much of it, to be fair, because I've been working hard, but I've been listening to bits of it and catching some highlights in that, and I think it's really kicked off this time, hasn't it? It's really caught a bit of imagination, I think. I think women's cricket is really on the march, and we've got an old girl from my school who's sort of on the fringe of the, in Tash Varrant, who's sort of on the fringe of the England team, hasn't quite broken through yet, but so that adds a little bit of extra interest in it for me. And the so-called lesser nations are getting better, aren't they? So I think in a way the surprise defeat at the start for the England team was a good thing for the tournament, and it's not, you're not quite sure who's going to be able to beat who. It used to be a bit of a walkover for some of those. There were mismatches, weren't there? But that's less the case now with professional coaches and whatnot.
That's right. And the Sri Lankan young lady scored 178.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is almost Halesian, let alone Stonemanian in its scope. Well, it's good to see. And we do talk to our local clubs here on this show from time to time about their girls and women's cricket, which seems to take place, Tim, with varying degrees of commitment.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know when we were talking to Matt earlier on at Outwood, when I went down to Outwood, I think it was last year, and it was actually to see a friend of mine's daughter play, and there was a very healthy sort of female scene going on there, and some of the clubs don't seem to sort of get involved so much. I guess it just depends whether you've got somebody who's prepared to actually galvanise it and get the whole thing going, and it can't be that easy if you've not got the sort of if you just don't have the players to perform. I know for the Outwood side, they sort of mix in adults with juniors, which is a good way of doing it for to get sides out and to obviously give the juniors a sort of lead into how to play. But yeah, unfortunately, not all clubs are as good as the others. I think it just needs somebody behind it, really.
Jim, are you still managing to keep a few more junior players involved in the men?
The men has evolved in quite an interesting way. There are about half a dozen of us at the core of the team who still play regularly, and we started playing together in 1980, and there were a couple more who joined in about 8 or 9 years later who are still, that's the real core of it. But we've picked up a number of players from the East London Community Cricket Club, who we met at Victoria Park and in Islington, and they've really bolstered the team now. Actually, in some ways, Mo Gupta, who's our key all rounder, and one or two others are pretty much the backbone of the thing. In pure cricketing terms, we still turn up and we still play, but we're all in our late 50s now, and you've got to have some people to scamper around and bend their back when they bowl. So.
Absolutely. Well, you're off on tour, Jim, this week. I'm off to Lord's on Thursday for the first day. Let's turn, and it's going to have to be briefly, I think, to the South African series. We've asked our other two guests, how do you see things panning out in four games with the Saffers?
Well, they look weakened, don't they? They've got key players missing, including the skipper, for this game anyway. There's a good familiar look about the England team, I think, even though Root is obviously having his first tryout. You've got to be optimistic, I would have thought. I think a bowling attack, I'm really pleased about Wood being back to fitness. I'm hoping we get him properly honed and sharpened, because I think he can reverse it, and that's what we want in for the Ashes.
He's apparently going to be wearing special boots designed to combat the impact on his heel. Hopefully he'll be all right.
He's reminiscent of Simon Jones, isn't he? He's got a similar sort of action, sort of hits the deck, but on you a little bit quicker than you think, and you know. And I think Stokes is emerging as an all rounder potential.
No frontline spinner.
That's been our problem for a long, long time. You know, we in my lifetime we've not had many great ones. No. We've had Underwood, we've had Swan, not many more than. I mean, we think who are going to breathe in the same breath as those two? Possibly no one.
And even Derek Underwood on wickets that weren't giving him a little bit of help. Saw Norman Gifford getting selected instead. Can you believe that at this distance?
Yes, blimey.
because with a fraction of help, Underwood was just, well, he was a medium-paced left-arm spinner.
Well, a lot of people listening probably won't remember uncovered wickets. Mm. I mean, I can barely remember them, but I remember watching Surrey play Kent at the Oval in the late 70s. Chris Tavery, now a work colleague of mine, was playing in the game. And Surrey got caught on a wet one, and he bowled us out twice. And honestly, it was just, I mean, he bowled at, a lot of people think he wasn't really a slow left arm bowler, was he? He bowled at sort of medium pace, really, and it was spitting and firing all over the place. It was extraordinary. And the catchers were in as much danger as the batsmen.
Inverarity's LBW at the Oval in 1968, and the photograph with everybody on the field in the picture except the square leg umpire. Absolutely extraordinary. They cleaned up Tim after a thunderstorm. Cowdery was captain, and the crowd came over the ropes and they mopped it up and deadly finished them off. A lot of people forget that it was Basil who got the breakthrough, as he so often did.
Yes. Yes, and that's something you really don't see now, do you? Is that sort of the medium pace wobbler? Mm. You know, you don't see that kind of, you know, most counties used to have someone who would just come in and bowl a little bit of swing, a little bit of, you know, just nip it around. Keeper would stand up, maybe. It's hardly, you know. Everybody in the kind of cricket I play bowls like that.
Exactly. and also plays on pretty much uncovered wickets.
Yeah.
And it's just a different world. I mean, I used to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek when I was playing Sunday wandering cricket, but I did quite often say on a Sunday, you know, I'd like to see some of the pros play against these bowlers on this surface.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the irony, isn't it? Is that when you play at sort of club level, you are playing on some pretty iffy pitches on occasion. And when you watch the pros playing and you think, oh, I'd love to. I mean, I remember playing on Horsham first 11 pitch once on a cricket conference fixture that we got, and it was flat. It was amazing. You know, we played at Reed School a couple of years ago. Same thing, flat wicket, absolutely like a road.
Yeah.
And I've got used to playing on potholes. And,
yes,
you know,
absolutely.
There's a grass on a length, and you know, you just don't realise. And I think the pros would struggle on some of those pitches.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, especially against, as you say, some of those dobbly boulders just tossing it up.
Yeah.
Jim, very quickly. Seconds, literally. prediction for the South Africa series? We've asked everybody else.
I think England will win this series. I think we will win at Lord's if the weather stays fine. I'm going to go for a 2-0 win in the series.
Jim Grant, it's been absolutely brilliant to have you back here on the front foot, as it's now known. Thanks for your contributions tonight.
Pleasure, thanks for having me.
Tim, always a pleasure.
Yes, thanks very much, David. I'm back tomorrow, 9 o'clock till 12.
Indeed you are. I'm back tomorrow, 2 till 4. It's time for you to say goodnight, Tim.
Good night.
And that was On the Front Foot Volume 2 for this season of 2017. My thanks to Jim Grant and to Trevor Stevens and to Matt Norman for their contributions to proceedings tonight, and also to my co-host Tim Burling. We'll be back at the beginning of next month with another On the Front Foot. Just quickly, Merstham Cricket Club holding a barbecue this Saturday for all members and guests. Entry £5. Barbecue starts up after the match at Quality Street between the first team and Merrow in Surrey Championship Div 5. If members wish to attend, please inform club captain Richard Feast via email. That's been On the Front Foot. Tim is indeed back in Steve Lee's slot tomorrow evening. I'll be with you for the stroll between 2 and 4 on Susie 103.4. I'll see you then till we meet again. From me, David Jay, it's a very good evening.